Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
We've got good news. The world is open again, and people like you, people of faith, are traveling to Catholic sites around the world. Want to travel with exceptional Catholic leaders this fall, next year, or in the future? Are you looking to see specific sites, celebrate traditional Latin Mass, or travel to destinations without vaccine requirements? We are here to help you deepen your faith on pilgrimage. Give us a call at 1-800-842-4842 or visit us online at selectinternationaltours.com. Select International Tours is your pilgrimage company, and we have the perfect Catholic trip for you.
Are you looking to serve God and society? Consider putting your gifts to work as a lawyer. Ave Maria School of Law has been educating faith-filled lawyers for over 20 years. Ave Maria School of Law is committed to training lawyers to use law appropriately around the moral issues of our time. Visit avemarialaw.edu to learn more about integrating your faith with a law degree.
Warning, the Catholic Man Show contains high levels of manliness. If you think you may be too weak to withstand the manliness represented in the following program, please do yourself a favor and stop listening now. If you choose to continue in spite of this warning, if at any time you feel yourself overcome by the manliness, stop immediately and consult your closest medical professional. And now, for the not-so-fair, faint, or frilly, we present The Catholic Man Show.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side, so raise your glass. Adam Minahan here, sitting with David Niles, Juan on the buttons, El Producer Juan, looking good in his plaid and his hair's all did. And
blue flannel.
Looking good. Juan, Jim is also here this evening, checking the door, making sure no one breaks in.
He looks pretty regular. Security. I think.
Pretty normal.
Pretty regular.
With Jim, the Catholic Man Show hat.
That the original classic Catholic Man Show hat.
That's a nice OG hat.
Yeah. Can't even get that hat anymore.
Yeah. That's how big time that it, boom, there it is on, yeah. On the
look
video.
Look at that.
I think I have a few left.
He has a few left. Reach out to Jim if you want one. He can possibly get you one. We also have a very distinguished guest this evening. I'm excited to have Dr. Aaron Henderson here from the Alcuin Institute of Catholic Culture in the Diocese of Tulsa in Eastern Oklahoma. Aaron, great to have you here.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me. Pleasure.
Feels good to be a doctor, probably, right? I mean, like, that's
it does.
Cool.
I don't want to say it's an ontological change, but it's an ontological change.
Sure.
I've become a new kind of creature. So it's fun, you know? It's good.
Yeah. I mean, it's indelible.
Yeah, an indelible mark. That's right.
Yeah. You can't take it away. I mean,
One of the things that you just recently moved here to the Diocese of Tulsa.
I did. Yeah, I moved in, I guess, at the end of July, actually, and then started with the Institute in August.
And he actually works right across the hall from me. He's the office right across the hall. And so
I do.
One of the great things about having you here at the Diocese is that in the morning time, I'll come over to you and be like, listen, Aaron, I've been thinking about this all weekend. What is the answer to this question? And I'll like give it to you because it wears me out. And then you are like, well,
there's which two. Which is more essential in the peanut? Is it the peanut or the chocolate?
There's two things you can think
about.
Which
is the most essential element there, please. I have to know.
And, yeah, you got to make distinctions, right?
Right. So you draw it out and you're able to give me the answer. It's a huge perk of working the diocese when I have a Dr. Malosh right next door to me. I have Dr. Henderson right across the hall from me. So I have like two theologians right across, right all around me within the work area to where I can ask questions. So I thoroughly enjoy having you at the diocese. You're a huge benefit to the diocese already. You've had some Socratic dialogues within
that's right.
The diocese. You had a great lecture series at in Stillwater.
Oh yeah, that was awesome.
With Father Brian O'Brien, a frequent guest on the Catholic Man Show.
Father Carey,
and Father Carey Mikulich. Mm-hmm. Yep. And yep. So, you've been nothing but a great benefit to the diocese, and we're really excited. I've told you this from when you first started. Like, I'm just really pumped to see where the Diocese of Tulsa in Eastern Oklahoma is in like 5 years.
Yeah.
Because it seems like we have all the right people in play to move forward, and we have the bishop with the vision of understanding mm-hmm. like the importance of Catholic culture and reviving the Catholic culture from a grassroots stance. And it's happening. I mean, yeah. It's like, it's not something that's, I hope that this takes root. Like, it's like, no, it's already happening.
Yeah, it's happening.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, when I go to different events and stuff, I will tell the people, like, you may not even realize just how much you have going on in the diocese. And I'm not trying to talk up the Institute when I'm saying that. I just mean all kinds of stuff. But sometimes I'll say, okay, the stuff that you all have going on in your diocese, but it's our diocese now. You know, I'm mm-hmm. part of this thing. And yeah, I'm very excited about things the Institute is doing. Working with Dr. Malosh is wonderful. Working with yourself at the Chancery, Deacon Garlick, you know, all the people. It's been awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, and so if you go to the alcuininstitute.org, you can check mm-hmm. out some of the musings and essays that not only you have written, but mm-hmm. Dr. Malosh, Eli Stone. There's a bunch of guys who've, Joey Spencer.
Yep.
Joey's been on our show when we talked about angels, which is a great great episode. Dr. Malosh has been on the show when we talked about the Regenberg's address.
Nice.
I'm excited for the Charlemagne Ball.
That should be great. So yeah, we have that on February 26th. So if anyone who wants to come, you know, if you want to take your spouse out for a good date or something,
mm-hmm.
Good night of dancing, and they even have dance lessons available. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a good time.
I'm going to a couple of the dance lessons because I don't actually know how to waltz.
I don't either.
I have watched people waltz, and I know how to fake waltz. You know,
yeah,
like.
Take it till you make a square.
Yeah, like kind of spin in a square, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
But I want to learn how to actually do that.
I think I learned in the eighth grade, so let's see if I can revitalize my eighth grade knowledge of dancing.
Nice. So for those...
I hope you can.
Yeah, thank you.
Aaron, for those who do not know, maybe listening to the first time to the Catholic Man Show... maybe you can give a rundown of what the Alcuin Institute is, what the purpose is, and why it's unique to the diocese.
Yeah, of course. So in 2018, the bishop kind of had this pastoral plan for the entire diocese, and that included revitalizing Catholic education and culture. So the Alcuin Institute is part of that initiative, a large part of that initiative. And so that's what we're trying to do, revitalize education and culture in the diocese. And we take as our patron, as our inspiration, as our, figurehead, Blessed Alcuin of York. So he's not super well known, I don't think, but under Emperor Charlemagne, he was kind of the guy who tried to revitalize culture and education in the empire. So this is a pretty important figure. And he kind of had these different approaches that we try to exemplify in the Institute. So one of the things was he realized that we had to have contact with reality, which is exactly what we're going to talk about tonight, right? So, he did repopulate the forests of Europe with boar and with deer to get people kind of outside, this emphasis on outdoor culture that I know, Richard Malosh likes a lot. But also for a practical purpose, because they needed things to write on and things to write with. So, he has these speculative things in mind. We need contact with reality, but also these practical things.
Because they use deer hide to write on.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Vellum and then used the boar hair to write with mm-hmm. or to make brushes and so forth.
I tried to convince Dr. Malosh to start a printing press.
Okay.
Like an old school vellum.
Yeah.
Like, the Alcuin Institute Press.
Yeah, that'd be wonderful.
They're actually printing books on deer hide. I think it'd be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely an art. It's an art form.
Be a big book, though.
Yeah, it would. And then the second thing was he realized that we had to have recourse to the wisdom of the past. Not just can we, which is another part of probably what we'll talk about tonight. Like, can St. Thomas, for instance, this 13th century author, can he say anything to us today? Because you might think no. I mean, we already tend to think that our grandparents and great-grandparents, they were outdated. Their ideas are old. They're washed mm-hmm. up.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You might think that. Alcuin didn't think that, and we don't think that at the Alcuin Institute. And so he opened these centers of learning where they meticulously copied these ancient texts, right? So barbarian invasions and stuff had kind of destroyed a lot of these wonderful works, but what Alcuin could salvage, he did. And so we're thankful for him for that. And then finally, he knew that learning always took place in the context of friendship. So the Alcuin Institute, we really try to highlight that. So at our events, we'll have good food, good drink. We come together as friends, journeying toward the truth together. So I think that's really important, and I think it's something that we at least try to do well, and we've seen some good results. So,
in fact, you guys do it so well that we're partnering with you at St. Michael Catholic Radio to have a speaker series. So for those who are here in Tulsa, you guys know that we have a speaker series every month where we bring in a guest. And so this year we're partnering with the Alcuin Institute. So every guest that we bring in, we realized, hey, the Alcuin Institute is so good at the virtue of hospitality, of welcoming, of good food, good drink. And so we're partnering with you guys for all of these, to where you guys provide the food, the drink, we provide the speaker, and we do this together in the diocese.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think it's going to be an awesome collaboration.
Yeah. So speaking of drink, this is something that we do every episode.
Indeed.
If this is your first time listening, we open, review, and enjoy a beverage. This year,
we're drinking a lot.
This year, we're doing something different. Yeah.
It's the year of Elijah.
This will last us all year.
Right. Well, you know what? With how strong it is, it could possibly. So this episode, we're drinking Elijah Craig's single barrel, but this is a private barrel. So this is very interesting, and it's something like, if you are in with the liquor stores in your area, you can possibly get. So this is something that I have learned, that if you become buddy buddies with of the big liquor store, and you give them your number and they get something unique, they'll call you and hold it for you. One of the things that they held for me was this Elijah Craig single barrel. It's a private barrel. So the liquor store bought a barrel from Elijah Craig, and then they bottled it. So it says it's a private barrel for 2021 Aspen Liquor, which is the liquor store here in Tulsa. And it gives the barrel number. So the idea is that it's barrel proof, right? It's uncut. There's no extra water added to it. It is straight from, it's uncut. The angel share is gone, but it is poured in. So it is 97%, a little over 97% ABV.
It's pretty heavy.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do is we're going to try it, and then we may add a little bit of water to kind of open it up, because odds are it's going to be pretty hot. So when we get back, we will add a little bit of water, but in the meantime, we're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass and cheers to Jesus.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Have you ever wanted to go to Ireland and tour County Cork, or have a beer in Dublin, or see the Cliffs of Moher? Well, we are partnering up with Select International Tours, and we are planning a Ireland pilgrimage this year. Go to selectinternationaltours.com/CatholicManShow, and we will keep you posted on everything that's going on. Ireland is one of the places that you are able to travel to, whether you have a vaccine, whether you don't have a vaccine. There's no quarantine. All you have to do is have a negative test within a couple days. So anyway, we're planning a trip to Ireland. We would love to have you there. Go to selectinternationaltours.com/CatholicManShow, and let's have a beer together and cheers to Jesus in Ireland.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles. Here with Adam Minahan, Dr. Aaron. We got Jim and Juan. It's a full house today. Mm-hmm. We're really rocking it hard. We're drinking this almost 100% Elijah Craig.
I apologize. I said 97%. I meant 67%. Switched my nines and sixes.
When you said that, I immediately picked up the bottle and I was like, are you serious? This is almost 100%. And I looked at it and I was like,
I apologize.
67%.
And I had not even been drinking before.
Thought we were drinking moonshine.
67.25%, to be specific.
Yes. So,
which is still strong.
It is extremely strong.
It's definitely strong.
It is much better with a couple drops of water, for sure.
You know, you're looking at like 128 proof right there.
It is.
I think it says on there.
It is bold.
134.5.
Yes.
Oh, you're right. It does say, because that would be 67 and a quarter times 2 is not 128.
Yep.
It's 135.
Almost.
You know what I was doing? I was like, all right. It's 17. Anyway, I don't have to tell you what I was doing. I just did it wrong. I just was bad math.
What you did was wrong.
It was just way wrong.
Yes.
Okay. I did that on purpose, Adam.
So to, that, like, cover to make me feel better.
Yeah, exactly.
I appreciate it. This is why we're friends.
I know math.
All right. This is why we're friends.
Sort of. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. People have different gifts.
But then the doctorate here in the house is like, yeah, I'm pretty sure it says on the bottle. Like,
I'm pretty sure it says on the bottle, you're an idiot.
Right.
I've gotten used to reading things carefully. Yeah. I guess that's...
He does. So one of the things that Dr. Henderson did, which I was very grateful for, was he proofread some of our book that is coming out.
Mm.
I did.
I'm very sorry about that.
No, it was great. I'm glad you guys are making it.
He only did my chapter.
One chapter,
I was very self-conscious about it.
Oh.
So he didn't do any of yours, but...
Praise God.
Yeah, praise God. There was not enough ink in this world.
Right.
No, I'm just joking. So there are a couple things that I want to...
There's no sense in, like, criticizing something that can't be changed.
Right, because it's basically locked in.
It is too late. Yeah.
Locked in.
So there's a couple things that I want to talk about before we get into the gear this evening.
Okay.
One thing is that if you're listening right now, we are giving away a hardback Summa. We're giving a 5-volume set of the Summa Theologica. It is.
It's really, really a beautiful set. So, well, I mean, like the binding, it's all really, 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 really nice.
Right. Mm-hmm. So if you go to thecatholicmanshow.com/Summa, there are multiple ways of being able to enter. And so we'll be next week drawing the winner of this giveaway. But we're also giving away a second set. We're giving away two sets. That set and the second set we're giving away is. Anybody who joins our Patreon, anybody who supports the show, 100% of what you support goes back into the show. Dave and I do not take any of the money for ourselves
Correct.
Or for our children. So,
I have number five on the way. So I have like a lot of kids.
I thought you meant you had five on the way.
My wife is
quintuplets, right?
Is that what it is?
Quintuplets.
Like, what is it? Quintuplets. Yeah, quintuplets. It's like not sextuplets, which would be the most ironic number, you know, to have on the way. But
yeah. But Lady Pamela is pregnant.
She is.
Last week you kind of hinted at that, and then you kind of backtracked.
I didn't hint at it. I was creating a hypothetical scenario.
Asking for a friend.
I was asking for a friend.
Way to go, Juan. Yes. So Lady Pamela is pregnant. So anyway, if you go to patreon.com/thecatholicmanshow, we'll be giving away another set of the Summa. This is just another way we're able to do so. And we did it because catholicsacramentals.org hooked us up with
So I was going to ask, is it available on Deacon Jay's website? Like, could you go and look at it if you wanted to see it? Could you just go peek at it on his website?
You can peek at it on our website.
Oh, even better.
thecatholicmanshow.com/Summa.
Also, we do highly recommend catholicsacramentals.org. Just to, like, if you want to get a sacramental, he doesn't support he's not a sponsor of our show, but Deacon Jay basically is like my spirit animal, I think. At least he's like the spirit animal I like aspire to. Does that make sense?
Yeah, he's a solid spirit animal.
I mean, thank you. Yeah. So like all of the stuff on his website is really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
He only sells awesome stuff. This is like the most awesome version of stuff that he has on his website.
Catholic stuff.
Yeah, so, the Summa is like the awesome version of a book.
Yeah.
Like,
so just today, I was at Clear Creek Monastery, and I was visiting with Father Nesbitt, and I asked
brother
him...
Brother Father Nesbitt.
You know, like people who listen to the show are familiar with Father Nesbitt. And I said, Father Nesbitt, if you could only have one book for the rest of your life, you could only read one book for the rest of your life besides the Bible, obviously, what would it be? And he's like, well, as a monk, we pray the office, so I would really need the breviary.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, fine, besides the breviary, what would it be? And he thought, for only like 4 seconds.
Which is like light year fast for a monk. 4 seconds is like
usually it takes 4 years. So 4 right, seconds,
right, right, yes. They're patient. You know, yes. they're not in a hurry
to
ever
a no. conclusion at all.
And he said the Summa.
Nice.
It would be the Summa.
Solid choice.
Which surprised me because like that's not. I was expecting more like a spiritual. You know, like yeah. maybe the life of Christ, divine intimacy. Yeah. You know, the soul of the apostle. You know, like something like that. The Summa. He's a big Summa guy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is, when you reflect on the mysteries of faith, as St. Thomas explains them, they conduce towards contemplation and prayer and all those kinds of things. There's not a divide between right. like the speculative and the practical, the contemplative and the active, those different things. There's mm-hmm. there's complementarity.
So. Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, if you want to check one out, go to thecatholicmanshow.com/summa. We would like to give that away to you. If you would like. So
okay. we need to get to the man gear today.
Let's do it.
Because I think this is really going to set the stage for a conversation.
Okay.
This evening. The man gear today is a real life photo album. Not like one on your browser.
Not on Facebook.
Not on Facebook.
Or like Google Photos.
Not on Google Photos. Although it might start there. You know, that could be fine. I have some that have started on Google Photos. But a real life on the shelf, maybe in the living room, maybe on the coffee table, photo album. You know, like, I'm 35, which is, like, older than I would like it to be. But I remember going to my grandmother's house, and I bet you guys do too, and actually seeing the big photo albums. Oh, yeah. I grew up seeing them there, and I probably went through them over my life, like, 20 or 30 times, right? Mm-hmm. Enough where over the years when I would go and visit and I would go through them again, I'd be like, yep, I remember that picture. Oh, yeah. I remember that picture. That's a good picture. Like, oh, that's a funny picture.
There's Uncle you know, Bob.
Right,
Uncle,
exactly. You know, like, and it wasn't, it became familiar to me.
Right.
But I still liked going through it because it was there. It was physically present for me.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, I have looked at those pictures probably more than I've looked at any other picture. You know what I mean? Because it was
including those on your phone.
Because it was there. And I take, you know, today we take thousands of pictures a year.
Yeah.
Or whatever, however many it is.
I have like 6,000 pictures on my phone, you know, and the ones from 2000, whatever, 16. I mean, have I looked at them since then?
Right.
Probably not.
No.
Unless
yeah.
I've been going through and saying like, whoa, what should I delete? You know?
Right. Like, so it's how did not this very, one get saved?
Yeah. Like, it's not a very intimate connection.
This is
with
a picture
pictures.
Of a piece of paper.
Yeah. Or food or whatever. You
I
know?
Didn't mean to save this recipe. That was yeah. temporary.
Well, and like as someone who had until recently was in grad school, you would be amazed how many pictures of pages of books I have. Mm. Hundreds and hundreds. You know, it's like, oh, I don't have time to scan this, or I can't buy this book because I'm, you know, I don't have money. So I'm going to take pictures
in
the library. I
only need this one page anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. So I have just so many pictures of pages of books, some in English, some in other languages. And I'm like, why is this here? Why do I need this? So.
Right. And so you're not married.
No.
Adam and I are both married. We have kids. The pictures
get crazy. They, get a little out of
it's
hand.
Exponential sure, yeah. once kids are born, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when my oldest Elizabeth was born, Pamela, Lady Pamela, she would sit at home. I remember one day she took 100 pictures. It was the exact same picture 100 times.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
You know, because you're just, especially with your first, totally enamored. You cannot help yourself. Like, this baby is the best baby of all, like, no baby has ever been like this before, yeah. right? This baby did, like, oh my gosh.
Did the baby just hold the bottle by itself? I think the baby is a prodigy. Our baby is right. smart.
Oh, it smiled.
Yeah.
yeah.
That picture was me trying to get it smiling, right. but it only smiled for a second, and I wasn't quick enough. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, yeah. So anyway, but there's all these great pictures that we take, and really, I think people are pretty good these days about capturing good mm-hmm. moments. Because we have the, you know, our devices are so handy and we can do that. But what's the point? Right. It's on your phone. And I feel like we have adopted this mentality of like ownership or something where I captured the moment. Now it belongs to me. Mm-hmm. And so like, I've got it. I'm done. You know, like now it's mine to use as I will or something. Right. And it was just making me think about this and how there's all these great things and we feel like we've done something positive by taking all these great pictures, but there's no point to it.
Yeah.
Because they'll never be looked. The point of a picture is to look at it again.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I mean, I've been to like a botanical garden and I was walking around and instead of actually looking at the plants and stuff, I was just taking pictures of the plants. And it kind of really yes. hit me and I was like, what am I doing? You know, like now there's a temptation to take pictures because human memory is limited and not perfect. Whereas pictures in a certain respect are perfect as long as you right. maintain them. So there's that temptation. But if you lose track of that, that's a problem.
So I have a perfect example. I went to Rome and I was going through all these great, beautiful churches, picture, 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 picture. Then we got to some of them that said no pictures.
Yeah.
Those are the ones I remember.
Yeah. That's,
because instead that's right. of like being on a mission to take pictures of everything, I actually sat there and look. Gazed
yep.
and took it in. And I remember those. It's I mean, it's just incredible. It's like, don't take pictures of stuff unless you want to put it in a photo album.
Yes.
We'll be right back.
Hey guys, David Niles here. For those of you who don't know, for my day job, I'm a financial advisor, so I know firsthand how difficult investing can be. That's why I was so excited when we met Mark Lozano, founder and owner of Christ-Centered Capital. Mark's mission is to provide in-depth research and analysis on which companies and organizations align with Christian values and which ones don't. Of course, he's also seeking to provide investment recommendations and stock picks that have financial potential and are also aligned with Christian values. What I really love about what Mark is doing is that he's completely transparent about why a company might be a moral investment versus another one. He leaves it up to you so that you can make informed decisions. He's not just going to say, oh, this one's moral, this one's not. He'll give all of the reasons in the research that he's done with links to articles or whatever it may be, so that you can make the most informed decisions on your own investment portfolios. Because as Catholics, we have a duty to uphold Catholic values, and the same goes with our investments. So we want to be as virtuous as we can be, and Christ-Centered Capital is really invaluable. It's only $7 a month for you to go and sign up to get all of his recommendations and all of his research. To me, it's a no-brainer. If you're an investor and you want more information,
go to ChristCenteredCapital.com and use promo code TCMS2022 that lets Mark know that we sent you, and you get 1 month free of Christ-Centered Capital services, no obligations. ChristCenteredCapital.com, where do your values lie? Welcome back to the Catholic Command Show. If you're listening via radio, go to thecatholicmandshow.com. You can check out this full episode and all the other episodes that we've done. We've done over 300. We've now beaten Seinfeld, Friends, The Office. All of those did not have over 300 episodes.
That's very impressive.
So we have now beat all of them. We're looking for an Emmy this year. We'll see. We don't know yet. So go to thecatholicmandshow.com.
I mean, like,
Juan almost spilled out his whiskey.
If the governor of New York, I don't know what did he get an Emmy. I don't remember what he got, but it was something ridiculous. If he can get one, like we can definitely.
We should be way higher.
Whatever
than that.
It was, yeah. He got. Like we should get at least three of those. Okay, because yeah. He didn't even do anything.
Right. In fact, he did. Yeah.
No, I know he wrote a book. Yeah. Okay. He ghost wrote a book. Okay.
That's how I feel when you look at recipients of the Nobel Peace Prize. It's like really you can. Pretty much do nothing and get that prize.
We're looking at you, Obama. Okay.
I didn't
elected
say it.
And you won a peace prize. Like.
That's right.
Okay, so before the break, we were talking about photo albums. Let's wipe that.
I just want to encourage people to like actually think about that and go out and do a photo album. You don't have to like make it a huge project. Just go back. I mean, like, I think it would be nice to have one for if you wanted to do four a year, maybe that's too many. But like, oh, here's spring 2021, summer 2021, or just have like one a year, 2021. Mm-hmm. Go back and look at, here's all the pictures from the year we took. If you do use something like Google Photos, which now is more annoying than it used to be because they don't give you free storage anymore. Now you got to like pay for it.
Pay like a chump.
It's ridiculous. I mean, yeah. Like.
Well, and there's really no excuse anymore, too, because like Adam was saying before, you don't have to go to the store and print off the pictures
right.
and, you know, find your glue stick and put it to paper, mm-hmm. right? You can go to whatever, chatbooks, these different companies. You just upload your pictures and it right. makes the book
Shutterfly.
For you. Now, I mean, I guess that makes it less intimate. You're not actually like kind of, but you're still selecting the pictures and maybe you write captions or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's super easy nowadays.
But you don't I don't even think like you have to make it that hard. Like, think about the photo books we were talking about looking at our grandparents' house. It was literally like clear pages that you slipped a picture into.
Cellophane
there was,
or something.
Yeah, there was no caption. There was no, like, cute border or what. I mean, it was just like, here's one picture.
Yep.
Here's the next.
It might have something on the back, like 1967.
Right, exactly. Right. So, like, if you just wanted to make, like, hey, here's four pictures on every page. You know, like, in one photo album, you could do winter, spring, summer, fall, right? Mm-hmm. For each year. Yeah. And you don't, the thing is, like, it's not the captions that make the photo album
it's the photo.
Attractive or good to look. It's like, it's the people in it. Mm-hmm. And you want to be able to look at them. And the fact that it has a physical presence there, like, on the shelf, kind of gives it more, it's like incarnated now, right? Yeah. And so, like, there's just something more beautiful about it.
Mm-hmm.
You took the picture for a reason now. Not just like to make yourself feel good, not just for like the like chemical bump you get from taking a picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know what I mean.
So this evening, the topic that you chose was realism.
Yes. So the whole thinking about photo albums led me into this question because I was sitting there thinking about digital photos, which led me to the thought: are digital things real?
Mm-hmm.
And I had two answers to that question in my mind because it's like, well, I don't know if those are real, but I know that like my computer monitor is real and my computer monitor can display the digital photo.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, if the digital picture is not real, then how does my monitor display it? So it must be real. But on the other hand, you can't touch it. That, you know, like it doesn't exist somewhere. I know like, oh, it exists on your hard drive, but like,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's pretty ethereal.
Is that nominalistic?
That's a good question. So is what nominalistic is
the idea?
Well, what is nominalism?
Touch, I can't.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about nominalism.
Talk about nominalism first.
Yeah. So, for, you know, Latin nerds out there, right? Nomen in Latin is name. So nominalism, there are kind of two forms of nominalism. One is kind of perennial and ancient. One is more contemporary, which we probably don't need to talk about. The contemporary one is about like the existence of abstract objects.
Mm-hmm.
So in the field of mathematics and the philosophy of mathematics, this is a big topic, and I don't pretend like I know too much about that. But the question would be, are there abstract objects? Some people would say yes, some people would say no, and there are implications, ramifications of that. But the more traditional thing is, do universals exist? Is everything in the world particular? And this is a bit of a simplistic version of nominalism, but we kind of have to do that. So it's like, because you can't, you know, dig into everything. But is everything in the world particular? Is there just that thing and that thing and that thing? Or are there like actually universals?
This is this tree. Or is there...
Yes, this... Well,
or is there such as a... tree. Is there tree-ness?
Is there tree-ness? That's
or
right.
Is there just this tree-ness?
That's right. And that's before even getting into, you know, like finer distinctions, like where is tree-ness located, if you want to use that term?
In trees. Like, I would say it's located in
trees. Okay, so you would answer that, and I would answer that too. But that's kind of what's going on with nominalism. It denies universals. It denies the essences of things. So is there such thing as dogness or catness? No.
According to nominalism.
Yeah. So William of Ockham, a famous example, you know, but you know, 14th century, you know, Franciscan friar, brilliant man, but, you know, has this nominalism and voluntarism, a lot of things that very much haunt his thought. But you can see the ramifications of this, because if I go out and Adam, actually, I don't know if you have any pets or not. Do you have any pets? You got a dog. I forgot about that.
Molly.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So if I went out there and saw Molly, and then there's another dog present too, you could ask yourself, what connects these two things?
Nothing.
Well, for the nominalist, it's by convention that we call these two things dog. But is there some dogness? Is there some essence? Is there some form of dog that somehow allows these things to be called dog? No. So it's by convention that we call these things dog.
I mean, that's just like, I can think of like at least two or three ways that that's just stupid.
Okay, yeah, tell me.
Okay, well, on the one hand, you're just saying that it's totally random that all of these things that convention calls dogs happen to be able to reproduce, and they can't reproduce with anything else, right?
Okay, interesting.
Okay,
point.
So like that's just totally random that by convention that happens to be a thing. Mm-hmm. Also, just convention that they all look exactly the same. Okay, like they all have these paws, they all have these tails, they all have these mouths with teeth with like the same, like a very similar dental pattern, yeah. Like the same skull, the same like. They have all these things in common? No. That's coincidence also. It's just convention.
No, I totally agree, especially when you get down to the nitty-gritty, like the bone structure and all that. But you have to admit, a Chihuahua does not look much like a Great Dane.
Right, but a Great Dane can still reproduce with a Chihuahua. It's
that,
like...
That would
it's,
be interesting, I, but yeah.
I'm not sure, like... What happens there, but like, I'm pretty.
It's not pretty.
I'm pretty sure actually that can still happen.
Yeah, perhaps.
If the Chihuahua survives, you know?
Yeah. So yeah, your appeal is to kind of like natural kinds into biology, and you're like, well, surely these are of the same kind because they can reproduce. I think that's pretty powerful. Now, I think anomalous would say, okay, we call them these same words, you know, dog, cat, whatever, because we do see similar characteristics. It's like, but that begs the question, right? Well, what's the foundation of these characteristics? Why do they have these characteristics? You know, you're kind of begging the question, and it's really not an out.
For a Catholic, ultimately, nominalism rejects the idea that man is made in God's image, because if man, humankind, mm-hmm. doesn't have human, like humanity-ness, mm-hmm. the thing that was given to us by God, then what's the difference between you and a dog? Well, there's just like you're you and the dog is it, and you know, like you actually aren't any more special. So this, like, all of a sudden you end up in heresy. This is just the problem. This is where I like depart from philosophy. I really like philosophy, like mm-hmm. as a hobbyist, not as like someone who actually does it very well. But when we start to get into some of these like stupid things in philosophy, it's like, yeah, well, how about you're just an idiot? How about that? Yeah. How about I don't need to respond to your stupid ideas? You know what I mean?
There's actually something to be said for that. I mean, like, you know, we try to establish common ground with people, and that's really good, and you know, for dialogue and so forth. Dialogue in the proper sense. But it's like, Aristotle thinks after a certain point, like if there's no common ground left, like if someone tries to deny the principle of non-contradiction, either the person is going to say nothing or he's going to say something and undermine his very position. So if he says banana, he means precisely banana and not banana, right? And so he undermines his very position in speaking, or he's just going to stay quiet and look like an idiot, right? Yeah. And so he doesn't use the example of banana. That was my example. Okay, just to be clear. But you get the point.
We use candy as an example.
Candy, okay.
Adam likes candy.
Example. Yeah,
candy.
I follow Reese's. Candy. Yeah, I follow that a lot.
Reese's or not Reese's, yeah. So okay. Anyway, that but you get
especially
the point.
Especially in Exodus 90, he really likes candy examples, yeah. But no, so like back to like the digital thing. Like that was my, you know, okay, if a digital thing isn't real, how's it displayed on the monitor? But like kind of my other line of thinking was, well, there are ideas. Are ideas real? Mm. Ideas can be brought to fruition. They can become real.
They have potential.
They have all this potential for reality.
Okay.
Okay, and a digital thing kind of seems the same, that like it's not real, but it has potential to become real.
Yeah.
You know, like I have ideas all the time. I have thoughts, but that doesn't mean like the like manifestation of that thought is real. Okay, so I thought really good arguments on both sides of this.
Yeah,
that's a great point. And I'd like to flesh them out.
Let's flesh it out.
On the other side of the break.
Sweet, I'm pumped.
Let's do it.
We'll be right back. I don't know if you have this marked on your calendar, but March 2nd, that is when Lent begins. And if you listen to one of our recent episodes on fasting, you know that it is important to prepare yourself to fast before
the Lenten season starts. And that's why we want to encourage you to go to Exodus90.com. They have a Lenten program. It's Exodus Lent. And it is not like Exodus 90. Unlike Exodus 90, you're able to take warm showers, warm showers, and drink alcohol. And when you're with others, watch sports. But I wouldn't be fooled about this because it's still a challenging 40 days in preparation for living the Christian life and the rest of your life. So go to Exodus90.com if you're looking for a way to make your Lent a more strenuous, a little bit more difficult of a Lent than what you're used to. Go to Exodus90.com.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles. We're talking about realism. I just want to make a statement that if this episode doesn't go well, we are all prepared to blame Archdeacon Harrison Garlick. Archdeacon Harrison Garlick I.
He's Lord Chancellor and he's also Bud, right, Adam?
I call him, yeah.
You call people Bud.
I do.
He does.
People don't like that.
I thought I was special.
I was going to say, Juan, does he call you Bud?
Si.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you thought it was the only Bud in your life.
Okay, so we're talking about realism.
Do you call people Chief?
No.
Hey, back at you, Chief.
In 10 years, he'll be calling people Chief, for sure.
It's a progression.
Yeah. Hey, Champ.
Yeah. Okay, so we're talking about realism.
We're talking about realism.
So Dave, you're talking about the idea, like our
digital
ideas.
Things real.
No, today. You're talking about ideas. Like, all right, now at this point, you're talking about.
Well, this was my original thought. Are digital things real? So many things are digital now. There's non-fungible tokens.
Yeah.
You know, like Bitcoin. Is Bitcoin real? You know, like, there's all these Bitcoin fanatics. If you even tell them Bitcoin's not real, they will fly off. They will jump off a cliff to prove to you Bitcoin is real. And I'm not anti-Bitcoin, right? I'm just trying to address the digital world that we live in and there's a reality to it. I want to know what it is, right? I think as Catholics, we should be firmly rooted in reality.
Yeah, I totally agree. Well, it's interesting because this would open a huge can of worms, so we can't do that. But like for the Thomists, for instance, even being itself, not just the term, but being, is analogical. So things don't exist in precisely the same way. So Adam and I were talking before the show about Aristotle's categories, right? You have substance, and then you have nine, you know, predicables, these nine accidental features of being, like time and place and relation and all these things. It's like, do these have being in the same way? Do they exist in the same way? No, clearly not.
Right.
Right? So when you ask the question, are digital things real?
Real in what way?
Are they real in the way that you are real?
No.
Are they real in the way that your hair being, you know, the quality of your hair being brown is real? No, it's a different kind of thing.
Right.
So, you know, first we probably need to make that distinction. There's kind of an analogy and not just univocity.
But are they real in the way my hair is absent in the way that it used to be? That's a good question. The Lord has seen fit to tonsure me.
Yes.
It's a blessing.
That is a blessing.
That's... Also, I'm already married, so who cares?
Yeah, there you go. That's right. So are digital things real? I mean, that's a good question. I would say, yes, they have some sort of, needless to say, they have some sort of being.
Right.
Otherwise, you couldn't even in principle experience them.
Right.
So they have some sort of being. But the question is, do they have, you know, is the kind of being that they have, does that lead us towards knowledge in the same way that face-to-face contact with something leads us to knowledge? You know, like if you look at a tree on Google, is that going to lead you to knowledge, even if it does lead you to some sort of knowledge, in the same way and with the same facility and all that, is actually going out to Yellowstone National Park, or I was thinking of Redwood, actually, and seeing the trees?
Or just any tree.
Or just any tree. I just wanted to mention an impressive tree, but yeah, you get my point. And so maybe that's kind of what you're getting at. Like in this digital age, if we're in contact with reality in a kind of indirect way, and in the mind we're kind of, anyway. But that's a good question. I mean, are we in contact with the tree and looking at a picture of a tree?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in some way we are, right? Otherwise we couldn't recognize it as a tree and right. all these kinds of things.
There's tree-ness.
There's tree-ness. You know, assuming you already know what a tree is, if you see a picture, you're it's like, oh, it's a tree.
A representation of tree-ness anyway.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, is a picture of Adam, is it Adam?
No.
Well, no. It's some sort of likeness of Adam.
Uh-huh.
Right, so I mean, you can do all this study on who Father Gary Gu Lagrange is. You can understand when he was born, when he died, what books he wrote, what yes. books he read, who he studied under, like how much he wrote, you know, regarding St. Thomas Aquinas. But yeah. if you don't, if you did not get a chance to meet him and sit down with him and have lunch with him or have you know share a drink with him or whatever, yeah. do you really know him? Same way with Jesus, right? So you can sit there and read the whole Bible and you know and know who Jesus is.
Yeah,
and read his life, read the Passion, even watch the movie The Passion.
Mm.
But do you have a relationship with? Do you know who he is? Do you have this contemplative life where you actually have a relationship with him?
Yeah,
that's the difference, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, definitely. Because I mean, think of I don't want to you know like bash biblical scholars or anything, but it's like nowadays it seems like most biblical scholars, you know, they're involved in like studying the historical Jesus. Mm-hmm. And like you said, they know things about his life and they know, you know, what this author wrote about him and about the Christian movement and so forth. And that's all well and good. But the difficulty is a lot of these biblical scholars they don't have a relationship with Christ, right. say if you, especially mm-hmm. a sacramental one. And so they're viewing Christ as just an object for historical study. And that so diminishes the person of Christ that you just can't read the scriptures rightly. You can't. And I'm one of those people that thinks that the scriptures can only be read rightly, like 100% rightly, of course, in the bosom of the church, in the liturgy in particular, where the church is living out her life, because it's like a family book. And right. so just like you were talking about photo albums, right? Like you've looked at these pictures all your life and you have a sense of like, oh, this happened here, this happened here. And you know, the significance maybe of these events. It's the same for the church, right? The church and her tradition is like this memory,
right?
Or this pristine memory, and the scriptures are made alive in the context of that. I don't want to get off the tangent.
Well,
about
sure,
scripture,
but I mean,
but
like, there's stories in my family. My dad has told these stories a bit. Yeah. Like these are family stories that have been passed down, and I know them.
Yeah,
and I can tell them word for word.
Yeah.
The way my dad
I can
told
tell them.
You can tell them word, word for word, probably. Yeah. So it's the same with the scriptures. You know, like these yeah. are important stories because it makes us who we are.
Yeah. And so, you know, as well as you can tell those stories and as well as Adam can tell those stories, how much more can the church, guided by the Holy Spirit, tell these stories, right?
Right.
And at least preserve the stories from error, right?
So. Okay. So the relationship of realism and truth.
Yeah. So, okay, we talked about nominalism.
Because that kind of, you know, piggybacks off of that.
Yeah. Yeah. So we talked about nominalism again. You know, no natures or essences, no universals, right? There's no abstraction. You know, we're not abstracting the form of tree from trees that we see.
Mm-hmm.
But you could also go. So St. Thomas is often said to have a kind of moderate realism. So if he has a moderate realism, what do you think extreme or radical realism is?
I don't know.
Sorry, I'm used to asking people questions.
Yes, I mean,
would that be more of like I don't know what you call it, but like if I can't touch it, see it, taste it, smell it, yeah, it doesn't senses. Exist.
Okay, yeah. So you see that today in a kind of scientism, right?
The reduction scientism,
of,
yes,
reduction of all knowledge to the scientific form of knowledge.
Does the number of four exist?
Well, hey, no, that's exactly what I was talking about with nominalism, because do abstract objects exist? Right. Does four exist? Do mathematical objects yeah. exist?
And even in math, there are imaginary numbers.
That's right. So what I was trying to get at is what's kind of on the other side of the extreme from nominalism? Well, it's a kind of a Platonic view of the world in which the things we see around us are but shadowy images of the really real. Which exists in the realm of the forms, right? Where is tree-ness? It's not in the tree. It's up there. I mean, metaphorically, right? It's in this realm of the really real. It's not in the tree.
Mm-hmm.
The tree but participates in a very dim way in tree-ness, right? But that's not what Aristotle thought. That's not what St. Thomas thought, right? Tree-ness is somehow in the tree and in our mind, right? Albeit in a different way.
Right.
So when we know a tree, we, in some sense, this kind of difficult language, but intentionally, we become the tree, right? Again, we don't actually become
the
tree.
The experience of it helps you understand what it is.
Yeah, but the form of tree actually comes to be in your mind. That's mm-hmm. pretty incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like the very form of tree, you know?
Almost to the point where if you could, you could create a tree because you understand the essence of treeness.
Well,
like if you were given power to do so.
Yeah, so that it gets a little tricky because even when we say we know the essence of a thing, have we comprehended it? Mm. Usually not. Yeah. So St. Thomas will say, we can't comprehend the essence even of a single fly.
Oh, really?
A single fly. And so think about the human person now. You know,
flies are more complicated than trees, though. I mean, like, just
yeah. Well, in some way, flies are much more complicated than trees, but yeah. in other ways, they're not. But think about the mystery of the human person, like you and Adam. It's like, can I exhaust everything there is to know about you and Adam and knowing man and getting to know you?
Could
all
you even
know?
Exhaust everything there is to know about yourself?
No,
you know what I mean.
No, like, and I'm not one for phenomenology, except you know, in small doses. But it's like the mystery of the human person. There's a depth there that just can't be plumbed
right.
fully. So that's pretty cool.
Okay, so what is that in relationship to Christ? How does Christ play a role in
yeah,
this?
Yeah, that's a good point. So, well, think about this. I mean, we can come to some natural knowledge of God by looking at the world around us. And that's pretty cool, mm-hmm. right? So in knowing things, and not yeah. in an anomalous way, but actually knowing things, we can come to some knowledge that God exists. But Christ reveals God to us in human flesh. He gives us an image that we can actually look at. He's the icon of the Father. So we can talk about that.
Okay, more. So if you're listening to the radio right now, go to thecatholicmanshow.com. You can check out the rest of this episode. Go also check out thealquininstitute.org. You can go have Aaron or Dr. Malosh be on your podcast or come speak to you in your diocese. We want to thank Dr. Henderson for being here. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus.
Cheers.
All right.
I'm glad we at least got to the Logos. We got at least a little bit to the Logos.
Deacon will be very happy.
Christ reveals man to himself and makes his supreme calling clear.
Yeah, that's right. Gaudium et Spes 22. That's right.
Boom.
You just quoted it. I can't quote it. I just know it.
Yeah. Well, this is a famous text, and it's actually... Well,
yeah, but I can't... There's a lot of famous texts quote, okay. You know? Like,
yeah, so it's,
I can only quote like four.
So is John 3:16.
Okay, I got three more, you know?
Well, fair enough, but the reason I know it is because I study nature grace stuff, and that's actually kind of a contentious passage, because what does that mean? Does that mean we don't know what man is without the word becoming flesh? And you can't quite say that, right? Because
you don't know what the end is.
Well, I don't think you fully understand. I mean, like,
okay. So yeah, that's probably part of the answer.
Yeah.
Cause if you didn't know what man was at all, when Christ came and took flesh and became a man, you couldn't even say that. You wouldn't know what it meant.
Right.
It's just unintelligible. It's like if you didn't know what natural human love was. When charity comes on the scene, the supernatural love of God, it would be unintelligible. It would be this alien force right. coming into the world, mm-hmm. into your life. It would have nothing to kind of grasp onto. It would be foreign to your experience and to your life, right into your intelligence.
But I think it's there in the quote, like, Christ reveals man to himself and makes his supreme calling clear. Not like his basic calling clear, but his supreme his calling clear. Calling.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that's the point. It's like, okay, on the one hand, you have man. You have human nature. Well, what's human nature capable of? Well, you know, all kinds of things. Intellection, volition, you know, as human beings, we can eat and drink, those kinds of things, these natural activities. And we can also know God and love God, etc. But God also knows of what we are capable with his divine help. And that's where I told you I would sneak it in. This is where obediential potency comes in, because there's this openness to receive obediential potency.
Obediential.
Or you can call it a potency of obedience.
No, don't do that. No, don't do that. Come on, obediential potency takes
away from it. Well, you know, it's this kind of crazy term, but it's beautiful because it means that the creature has this ontological openness to whatever God wills to give it, as long as it doesn't involve a contradiction, like you were talking about earlier. It's like, you know, God doesn't do something that involves a contradiction. And right. so, can he make a stone a son of Abraham?
I cannot believe you said that. I was about to use that example. Like,
so, yeah.
It was in the readings recently.
Yeah. So God can transform a rock into a human, of course. But can he make a rock as a rock, a participant in the divine life? No.
Right.
So the beautiful thing about the human person, about the human being, is we can be made participants in the divine life. We're not ordered to the divine life just naturally, but under God's active agency, we can actually attain to God supernaturally. That's beautiful. A rock can't do that. A frog can't do that. Juan can do that, but his pet can't do that. I don't know if you have a pet, Juan. But
he has a pet frog, actually. He has actually a pet
well,
frog.
Well, there you go. Your pet,
six of them.
Yes, six frogs. That's intense.
I just helped him move his pet frogs recently.
Okay. Where?
To the bathroom.
Okay.
Nice. There's no more questions.
We're done.
Figure the rest out.
He's redoing the floors in his house, and so they had to be moved.
Yeah, but Christ comes in here in a powerful way because, yes, he's the image of the Father. He's the icon of God. And so when he comes into the world, there's a sense in which, like, you know, in iconography, say, we can actually represent God in our artwork. That's not a joke. We can represent God, right? The eternal logos in human flesh. And this is a powerful thing. It changes everything, right? It gives all new meaning to the world as sacramental, as somehow pointing and in some sense manifesting divine, you know, spiritual realities.
Yeah.
So it's definitely powerful. And so looking at images of Christ, you know, with his grace, these can actually lift us up to contemplate the divine mystery and so forth. And so they're a little more powerful than just the pictures we have in our phone, you know, icons or works of theology. But still, I mean, seeing Jesus in human flesh, how incredible would that be, right? We encounter him in the Holy Eucharist, which is an indescribable gift. In some ways it is better. But the apostles and Mary Magdalene, you know, apostle of the apostles and all these people, they were given a singular grace of being able to see the Son of God in flesh face to face. You know, that's pretty incredible.
It would have been, yeah.
So this may be a dumb question, but so is there a hierarchy of realism?
Yes, some things are more real than others.
Sure.
Is that what you mean?
I would say humanity is more real than other animals.
Yes, absolutely.
Angels are more real.
Angels are, in a sense, more real than human beings.
Right, in as much as you participate in God's divine life, you are more real.
Yeah, so...
Otherwise, you're more of a shadow of reality than actually real.
Yeah, so God is of course most real, and that's because he's most actual, right?
His
essence is the same as his essay, right?
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, so his...
We talked to Carlo Broussard one time.
We're like... Wonderful. We're basically philosophers over here.
Yeah, but that's exactly right. There's no distinction in God.
Jim even knows this.
Actually, we had to talk to Carlo Broussard 18 times, but like...
18 well, hours.
18 hours.
18
wow.
hours, that's right.
Yeah. Actually, that's less probably than 18 times. Well, no, maybe not. Anyway, but the point is that...
It was brutal.
It was good, though. No, I thought it was good.
It was great, but his patience was...
I finally understood the five ways. It's like...
Well, maybe... Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, there's a lot there.
No kidding.
So, are you saying that the holier you are, the more real you are?
Well, we got to be careful.
I'm not sure about that. That's a good question.
Good question, Juan.
Well, we got to be careful. So on the one hand, I mean, there's a certain sense in which the answer is yes. I know that sounds radical, but it is, because think about it. If I were to say to you, in becoming holy, do you become more perfectly yourself and more perfectly human? What would you say?
Mucho.
Yes. That's right.
Yeah.
And so there's a sense, and this is not... this is not the ground for boasting. And why is it not a ground for boasting? Because grace given to us by God is gratuitous, right? He bestows grace on those whom he wills. It's a free gift. And so, like St. Paul says, we never can look at our works and say, I've done such
look
a great
at,
job.
Look at, all the
look at
I've
me,
done.
Right? Okay. Augustine, you know, he's crowning his own gifts, et cetera.
Right.
So there's that sense. But yeah, of course, like the more we become perfected in the image of God, the more perfectly human we become, we are in a sense more actualized, right?
Yeah.
We're perfected, and that's what we're called to be. So.
Yeah, I mean, and if you just think about it, someone who's living in mortal sin, they have lost a reality of themselves.
Of course, yeah. And you can even, I mean, that maybe that's a powerful thing to tell people. I mean, not in a kind of, like, you need to get in the, not in a finger-wagging kind of way, but say to people, do you know what great gift you had, and now you've lost something that really
right.
added something to you, you know? It really made you better than you are. It really lifted you up, made you more actual mm-hmm. in a certain respect, and now... You know, there's some being that's no longer there, and that's kind of unfortunate.
It reminds me of a couple episodes ago, Adam and I were talking about fasting, and we were discussing how fasting is one of the great paradoxes of the faith.
Mm-hmm.
How in denying yourself, it's like a death, and the more you die, the more you like come alive. You know, the more you in this death, you gain more self-mastery over your own appetites. And as you gain more self-mastery through more and more dying, you actually become more and more alive,
yeah.
more and more of a man at the same time. It's just like...
Because you worry less about the temporal and more about... You just have bandwidth.
You wield your God-given abilities more. Like, you have more free will
mm-hmm.
now. Before you were fasting, you had less free will.
Yeah.
You were more of a slave. Right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now I'm more fully alive because I've died. You know,
yeah.
it's like, it's the, that I think is the greatest paradox, the whole like death, life, you know, like you
yeah.
have to die so that you can live.
Yeah, exactly. So in the spiritual life, it's the paradox is precisely that the more you give of yourself, the more you receive.
Yeah.
So, and you know, Christ has those beautiful lines, you know, to the one who much has been given, you know, even that will be taken away in one context. But
to he who has little, even what he has will be taken away.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then so anyway, he's kind of fleshing out the spiritual life. And yeah, it's just a reality that when you give of yourself more, right, the more you love, the more love you receive in return, right?
Yeah.
There's this kind of interesting spiritual, I was going to say calculus. I don't know if that's the right term, but
sure.
you get my point.
We'll go with it, yeah.
We'll go with it,
yeah.
Jim, you said...
Juan, do we have any questions?
Yeah, you were acting... Yeah,
yeah. You touched briefly on the angelic beings and they being more real
angels,
than,
mm-hmm.
than humans. How so?
Yeah, well, that's a good point. So, I would say that as you go up the hierarchy of being, which just means the more perfect you get, the more perfect beings you get, the more real they are, and so angels are more real than human beings, in part because they're not tied to matter, and so. There's nothing more, except for God, there's in terms of creatures, there's nothing...
What about Mary?
Well, okay, so...
Mary kind of like ruins a lot of stuff sometimes,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
not ruins.
I mean, she,
a lot of like...
Adam's like, be careful,
yeah,
David,
yeah.
Not ruins.
As a slave to her,
yeah,
I will
right.
not
yeah, 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 yeah,
say
yeah,
this.
You know what I mean? But
No, I understand. So we might make a distinction. So are angels superior to Mary naturally?
Yes.
Yes,
they are.
But are they superior to Mary in the order of grace? No.
Right.
So Garrigou has an awesome book on this called Mother of the Savior, in which he talks about how Mary, we all know this, she was given this like totally unique, singular grace to be the mother of God, to be preserved from all sin, original and personal. But her divine maternity kind of bears on the hypostatic order in a way that our order of grace doesn't. She... Without being God, of course, she's still a creature. She, you know, she's not united personally
mm-hmm. There's
to the
infinite
Word.
There's an space between her and God.
That's exactly right. But she is quasi-infinitely higher than the angels. I mean, she's very much higher than the angels in the order of grace.
Because she bore
But
God.
Naturally, she, yeah, that's right. But and again, it's not because of anything she did.
Right.
Right. God willed from all eternity to bestow this grace upon her. And with God's grace, she accepts it and gives her fiat and so forth. But it's not as though Mary is before the throne of God and says, God, look how well I did. You know, I know you had me be the mother of God because you knew from all eternity that I would do well.
Right.
No.
She has a savior just like us.
That's exactly right.
Saved a little differently, yeah.
But Juan, to the question, yes, angels are more real than human beings naturally. They're pure spirits, so they're not separated, or they are separated from matter. They're not composed of matter and form. Now they are in some manner composed of essence and existence. So, even their manner of knowing is superior. They know material things either through God or through their own essences, whereas we have to know spiritual realities through physical things. And so pretty much just in every conceivable manner, angels naturally are better than human beings.
And like to make it more like confusing, so are demons.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, demons are more real than humans because naturally they are. I think demons in the end calculus, if we stick with that word, are substantially less real.
I totally agree. Yeah.
Because they have degraded their own reality, right? They have chosen to be less real. That was their free will, and they chose to not participate in reality.
Yeah.
Naturally, they still participate in reality the same way as angels. However, because they no longer have that divine life, you know, the divine life of Christ in them, like.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's the right verbiage for an angel, you know, but like, you know, they don't have that state of grace that we talk about for humanities.
Yeah, no, in humanity, that's exactly right. And it's funny, it's interesting too, because yeah, we can say of the damned that yeah, they're in some manner less real, you know, in that respect, and they've turned against that which will ultimately and finally fulfill them. So it's such a pitiable state. I mean, it's just almost unimaginably horrible.
Yeah.
And so that's why we should avoid it. So,
you know, like that's one of the things about Satan. People like a lot of people fear. I think a lot of people fear Satan. Mm-hmm. And I think if you understand him, you realize that he is like one of the weakest beings on the planet. Not that he cannot wield significant influence. He can influence, you know, like because he's given natural abilities to do so, right?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, he is like a dog on a chain, and it is Christ who says is the one holding the chain. You know, who says you may go this far and no further.
Yeah.
So you know, like for we who have faith, like there is no Satan to fear.
Yeah.
You know, we who have Christ as our Lord and Savior, who submit ourselves to His will, you know, who's Satan? Like. Who gives a crap about that dude? You know what I mean? Like, so what? Oh yeah, I know there's some dude in hell. Like, sucks to be him. I love Jesus. You know that's
So yeah, that's right. So that's the fundamental mentality we have to have without becoming prideful, because that's precisely what he wants. You know,
you don't love yourself. You love Jesus.
Right. Yeah. So there are temptations toward pride in the spiritual life that come with knowledge and with all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, I don't ever fall for those. That joke is just always funny. It always lands.
Jim, is there something else? Oh, okay. Juan was still
shout
looking.
Out to Ryan Robinson for the good questions.
Oh, thanks, Ryan.
Nice.
Patron member.
Yeah, so
I feel
so
like that was a good question.
It was a great question. So, you know, St. Thomas is the angelic doctor for a reason. So, you know, read St. Thomas. And, you know, in the Thomistic tradition, it's interesting because there's a sense that the angels are naturally indefectible. That is, naturally they're perfect. So if their falling had to do with just a natural defect, it wouldn't have happened. So in the beginning, they somehow failed to respond correctly to their supernatural inheritance, their supernatural end. They don't have the ability to sin against their natural end. They're perfect naturally.
Mm-hmm.
That's at least in the Thomistic tradition. And that's fascinating.
Right. Which makes sense because they still retain the abilities to do the, like, all the angels were created with a specific job in mind, right? Like, they're given a task to do. Like, even the word angel isn't so much what they are, but what they do, right?
Yeah. Angelos just means messenger.
It's they would be messengers or, you know, like deliverers of something. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they were given a specific job. They still retain naturally because that's part of their essence, you know, and they still have those same... Their essence has not changed, right? Because that's part of who they are.
Yeah. So sin does it. That's another cool thing you're talking about, realism. It's like, does sin change what we are? No. Right. It doesn't destroy human nature. It doesn't destroy angelic nature. But nevertheless, it militates against the goods of nature. It sure does. I mean, that's why when St. Thomas is talking about how sin impacts nature, does it destroy human nature? Does it like... totally erase our inclination toward virtue? No, but it is weakened, right? It is harder for us to attain to virtue. Right. There are roadblocks.
Right. So someone who commits a mortal sin is not physically weaker.
No.
Right. They can bench press the same after they have sinned.
Exactly. Yeah.
As they could before, but that's not the point. I mean, the same is kind of true with the angels. They were given specific abilities to do specific things as part of who they are. Like they're part of their essence. They can still use those same abilities, but now they use them towards evil ends instead of towards good ends. However, it's still only and always at the bidding and allowance of Christ.
Yeah, that's right. God is ultimately, you mentioned like rain, the imagery of rains, and I think that's good. I mean, God is provident over everything, and his providence is meticulous. So there's no thing that exists over which God is not provident.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and you don't need to get into the distinctions between like his simple will and, you know,
he has too, he has so many wills. Well, it does get confusing.
Well, he has one will, but I understand what you're
like,
saying.
Like, I feel like I've got the active and the passive will, and I try to leave it at that. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
he allows certain things, but he like desires other things.
Yeah, so sometimes God wills something, and if he wills it simply, it will come to be, right? But other things he simply permits, that would include human sin. So God is not the cause of human sin, either directly or indirectly.
Right.
He's the cause of the being of the act. He has to be.
Because he's the final cause of all things.
Yeah, well, he's not only the final cause, but he's the first cause. He's the efficient cause. So God has to create the act that you're doing. Now, does he create the defect? No, that is for dumb human beings to do, right? But does he create
stupid angels?
Does he create any being that's in that act? Yes, and he must.
Mm-hmm.
That's at least what.
Otherwise, you couldn't do it.
I mean, otherwise, you would be saying that there's some actuality. There's some, like we were talking about before, this realism thing. That there's some being in the world that God is not the cause of, and that is not possible. So.
Aaron, Dr. Aaron.
Dr. Henderson.
Dr. Henderson.
Dr. Aaron.
Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. I had a lot of fun.
It's been real.
I did not finish the bourbon, but it was good.
Yeah, I did not either. I was worried about trying to finish it.
I was worried too. I got to drive back home. So.
I hear it's like 97% alcohol.
It's 97%, yeah.
Trusted source says.
my tongue, all the skin is gone. So.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and we'll have you back on here soon. There's a host of things that we could talk about again.
Of course.
I'd love to have you back on.
Is that an angel pun?
A host? Oh, yeah, nice. I didn't even think of that.
I did not. That was not intentional, no. But go to the alquininstitute.org. Like I said, you guys can have Dr. Henderson or Dr. Malosh out for your parish mission.
If you're a bishop listening, like, go to the alquininstitute.org just so you can see, like, this is something good to institute in your
own
diocese, right?
Yeah, like, and it's we intended need more, to be a service, yeah.
We need more Alquin Institutes
we're,
out there.
We're not presuming that bishops listen to our show, but...
I'm just saying if.
If.
They might.
No presumption.
Maybe in, like, 100 years.
A bishop will listen to the show.
You know, a bishop might... like go back like, let me go listen to the old school stuff. You know what I mean? Like 100 years ago, what were they talking about? And they'll find this thing.
I pray that they don't listen to us. I pray they listen to something better.
Just saying. God's will is finicky.
God's will be done.
Right.
Yes. Thanks again. I appreciate it.
Thank you guys. All right. Appreciate it.